A secret recording catches Pfizer saying the quiet part out loud. Joe Rogan warns that we are empowering evil, and the Australian government has just introduced frightening legislation that should scare all parents resisting the New World Order. Those stories and more tonight. I'm Maria Z of ZMedia.com, and this is Vigilant Fox's Media Blackout. At a time where nobody trusts mRNA or vaccines anymore, this first story tonight couldn't have come at a more devastating time for the big pharma giant Pfizer, potentially putting the final nail in the coffin for the big pharma giant as far as public trust is concerned. Secret recording catches Pfizer scientists saying the quiet part out loud, and you'll never believe what she said about COVID-19 vaccines. The background of the story: Justin Leslie, a former operative with Project Veritas and O'Keefe Media Group and a scientist previously involved in vaccine formulation at Pfizer, has brought to light unreleased recordings that raise serious questions about the pharmaceutical giant's development and promotion of its COVID-19 quote-unquote vaccines. These recordings capture internal discussions among Pfizer's top vaccine researchers expressing grave concerns over the vaccine's safety, efficacy, and the rush to market due to the pandemic emergency. Now, according to Zero Hedge, the leaked footage includes an October 6, 2021 conversation with Kamwal Gill, a principal scientist at Pfizer, discussing the ethical implications of rolling out experimental booster injections. You can see her LinkedIn profile there. And Gill has responded by acknowledging the real-time nature of the data being collected and the historical challenges faced by mRNA vaccines, which had never previously reached clinical trials due to side effects. She actually says, this is real-time data that we are generating. We don't even know when we started vaccinating people. We had no idea how it's going to look like. mRNA vaccines have been there for 50 years, but nothing made to clinical. Why? Because mRNA vaccines have been known to have side effects, she added. Let's take a listen to the recording.
This video here is from October 6, 2021. I had a meeting with my manager, Kamwal Gill, a principal scientist working on the vaccine formulation at Pfizer. In this meeting, I asked her if it was okay to give people another experimental injection regarding the booster shots, or if it was a drive for money.
So are we,
but we are still,
like, do we know that, like, I mean, just thinking, like, ethically, like, is it okay to, like, give people another experimental injection? Like, are we sure it's going to be safe and effective? Are we just rolling these out because we want to roll them out for money? Like,
this is a real time data that we are generating. We don't even know. When we started vaccinating people, we had no idea how it's going to look like. Yeah. mRNA vaccines have been there for 50 years, no, but nothing made to clinical. Why? Because mRNA vaccines have been known to have side effects.
Right. But
Moderna has been working on it for 10 years. This is not the new thing. Right. But why it did not reach trial was because of all these side effects. We, Pfizer and Moderna, used the emergency and the pandemic to kind of get through it now.
Oh, we knew about the dangers of mRNA. This is nothing new. We've known about them for 50 years, and the pharmaceutical giants just kind of use the emergency to get them through anyway. Now, this is not something that all of us didn't already know, but to hear Pfizer's own people saying it, well, that's another ballgame. Gill also candidly admits that unlike the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, whose side effects were promptly identified, the mRNA and lipid nanoparticles used in Pfizer's vaccine are, quote, very sneaky, implying that significant complications may not have yet surfaced. She says, only Johnson & Johnson's side effects came out quickly, that there was a clot, that clot that was happening with Johnson & Johnson's. But other than that, mRNA and LNP are very sneaky. I think we are not still seeing a lot of, like, huge complications, Kanwal said. Let's listen to this other clip.
Kanwal then goes on to say that the vaccine was not so effective and says that the mRNA and LNPs are very sneaky.
Only Johnson & Johnson side effect came out quickly, like there was a clot that was happening with Johnson & Johnson's.
Right.
But other than that, mRNA and LNP are very sneaky, I think. We are not still seeing a lot of like huge complications.
She goes on to highlight how the clinical trials completely skipped normal clinical trials and went straight up, all at once, to phase 3.
There are three types of trials, right? Phase 1, phase 2, phase 3. We just went straight up. Right?
Yeah.
We just did this. But this is why it takes 10 years for a vaccine to come out.
Yeah.
It takes years of, you know, observation, blah, 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 1, then 2 and 3. Here, we are doing everything at the same time. So, everybody is as puzzled.
Yeah.
Nobody has 100, even CEO, Pfizer CEO and even Ugur Sahin won't have answers. Because they are like looking at it, closely watching it. At this point, that's all we can do. And I feel like, yeah, it's also becoming a money game.
It's just becoming a money game. So matter of fact, people are dying all over the world. We have people permanently disabled, cancer exploding in every single country. No accountability for this criminal organization known as Pfizer. And that's evidenced by all of the lawsuits that they've had over history for their practices. And we have Pfizer's own people acknowledging that this is just a money game. Wow. Another colleague, Ramin Davari, a pharmaceutical formulation scientist at Pfizer, was recorded expressing concerns that have been validated about the possibility that repeat booster intake could damage the cardiovascular system. Let's take a listen to some of that clip.
I think it's something that we should look into and make sure that the boosters
are looking into it.
Yeah.
It's just not our job to look into that.
Basically. Yeah.
But there are people within Pfizer, all the clinical people.
Okay.
That's and the safety people.
Right.
There are people who are not only looking at that, actually, there are reports that come to Pfizer, zillions of them every day.
Zillions.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think Pfizer gets mad when they don't mandate it?
From a business perspective?
Yeah.
It's just like saying, you think the chips companies, they're going to get mad if somebody says chips is not good for you? Of course.
Probably.
Yeah.
But I mean,
they don't care if people just eat chips all day and die. Because their job is
to sell chips.
Engineering it the way that I take. No, it's not even selling it. It's for me to take it, basically, right? Because otherwise I won't buy it.
Right.
Yeah. So you forget about those parts of business, basically. So
yeah.
Yeah. They're engineering it specifically for me to take the next one.
Right.
So increasing my consumption and increasing my consumption, guess what? It's going to affect my heart and I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And nobody's talking about that.
Yeah, I know.
While none of these revelations are particularly shocking in 2024, they cast a somber light on the internal discussions at Pfizer during the early injection rollouts. At a time when the company was publicly assuring there were no serious safety concerns, the candid conversations captured in Leslie's footage suggest a much more complex picture was emerging behind closed doors. Leslie's revealing narrative unfolds through his documentary Project Whistleblower, a two-part film designed to shed light on the severe misconduct in the context of the COVID-19 vaccine development and distribution, which you can watch here on the Vigilant News Network article we discussed before. Debt. You go to bed thinking about it, you wake up thinking about it. Here's the truth. The system traps you in debt. High interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt, and insane inflation keeps you stuck paycheck to paycheck. Done with Debt is your lifeline. Done with Debt has an ingenious new strategy to help erase your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Done with Debt analyzes all the debt options that you qualify for. They know how to reduce bills. They know how to cut interest rates. Their skilled staff of negotiators know how to get debt out of your life permanently without bankruptcy and without a loan. Done with Debt are the experts in brilliant strategies for eliminating debt. But you need to hurry because some debt solutions are time sensitive. Here's how easy they make it. Go to donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Donewithdebt.com. Well, you all might be aware of the story of the Boeing whistleblower who apparently recently committed suicide. Some new details that are very chilling have emerged, in which he apparently told a very close family friend that if anything happens to him, it's not suicide. Former Boeing manager and whistleblower John Barnett had told a close friend days before his untimely death that if anything happened to him, it would not be suicide. The Gateway pundit previously reported that Barnett was found dead from what appeared to be a self-inflicted wound inside his car in a hotel parking lot shortly after testifying against the aerospace company. Barnett had accused Boeing of neglecting safety concerns and retaliating against him for his disclosures. He was 62 years old and he had a 32-year tenure with the company until his retirement in 2017. And he died on March 9 during a break from depositions in a whistleblower retaliation lawsuit. He was alleging that under-pressure workers were deliberately fitting substandard parts to aircraft on the assembly line. That's according to the Daily Mail. Now, Charleston police are investigating after Barnett was found in his truck suffering from a gunshot wound to the head. According to the Daily Mail, Barnett was reportedly found with a silver handgun in his hand and his finger on the trigger. In the wake of his death, a suicide note was reportedly found near Barnett, raising questions and skepticism among his legal team. His attorneys have publicly questioned the conclusion that Barnett took his own life, urging the Charleston police for a thorough investigation. They emphasized Barnett's upbeat spirits before his scheduled deposition and expressed disbelief that he would commit suicide. Adding to the mystery, police have conducted an extensive examination of Barnett's vehicle, a process not typically associated with clear-cut suicides, and according to reports, police have also dusted his car for fingerprints. Hotel staff members also recounted Barnett appearing completely normal on the evening preceding his death. And now this. In a shocking revelation to ABC News, a close family friend of John Barnett disclosed his haunting premonition before his untimely death and said that if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. Let's take a listen to that clip.
I'm concerned about safety because I asked him, I said, aren't you scared? And he said, and his voice and his, the way he would talk, no, I ain't scared. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. You know, I know that he did not commit suicide. There's no way. He loved life too much. He loved his family too much. He loved his brothers too much to put them through what they're going through right now.
In an age where airlines are opening the doors to DEI hires and people suffering from schizophrenia in order to diversify their workforce, it seems the DEI agenda is turning deadly in more ways than one. And if John Barnett was killed for blowing the whistle, you have to ask yourself if the C40 Smart City agenda has anything to do with his death. We've spoken about the ARUP report, The Future of Urban Consumption in a 1.5 Degree World, on this broadcast before. It's the report that outlines the KPIs the New World Order must meet in order to save the climate or whatever. Well, on page 90 of this report, it clearly states that the progressive target by 2030 is to make sure that people are limited to one short-haul return flight, less than 1,500 kilometres or roughly 900 miles, every 2 years per person. Their ambitious target is to limit every person to one short-haul return flight of less than 1,500 kilometres every 3 years. So the question remains, will they go so far as to kill whistleblowers in order to make sure they destroy the airline industry and, in turn, people's confidence in flying to stop you from flying altogether? You decide. Well, Dr. Phil's in the headlines again, this time absolutely going off on the CDC. You damn well knew what you were doing when you did it. They knew that those schools were a lifeline to those kids and they shut it down anyway, lamented TV personality and psychologist Dr. Phil McGraw, commonly known as Dr. Phil, on Jordan Peterson's podcast. He said, you, CDC and Department of Education, had information that these children were not as susceptible to this disease as everyone else was. You knew they were in a mental health crisis. You knew this was their lifeline and you yanked it out from under them and you damn well knew what you were doing when you did it. Dr. Phil contends that the mentioned government agencies knew that schools staying open were essential for protecting children from their abusers at home because teachers, bus drivers, coaches, etc., were key to identifying signs of child abuse. They shut all of that down, the psychologist condemned, and when they did, those child abuse referrals dropped 40 to 50% in some major markets, and these kids were sent home behind closed doors, locked up with the very abusers. It's not that the abuse went down 40 or 50%. It probably went up because of the frustration of being locked up at home behind those doors, and they shut the schools down without any plan for bringing them back. And so you ask questions about it, continued Dr. Phil, and they said, well, we did the best we could with what we knew at the time. No, you did not do the best you could with what you knew at the time. Dr. Phil's anguish over school closures during COVID-19 is palpable as he reflects on the profound negative impacts these decisions have had on children's welfare and safety. He vehemently criticized the CDC and Department of Education for their actions, suggesting that these agencies had clear evidence that children were less at risk from COVID-19, but chose to ignore the data and allow children to suffer anyway. An analysis by the Institute of Economic Affairs criticizes the lockdowns, suggesting that they were a costly failure and that there was no need for them. Tell me about it. The broader impacts of lockdowns, as outlined by the study, include not only economic and social costs, but specific damages to children's education and mental health, highlighting the need for a more balanced approach to managing public health crises. And of course, we can stay away from the World Health Organization for a more balanced approach. Let's listen to some of his comments.
And they shut the schools down without any plan for bringing them back. And so you ask questions about it and they say, well, we did the best we could with what we knew at the time. No, you did not do the best you could with what you knew at the time. You had information that these children were not as susceptible to this disease as everyone else was. You knew they were in a mental health crisis. You knew this was their lifeline, and you yanked it out from under them. And you damn well knew what you were doing when you did it.
He's right. The children were the least at risk for this so-called deadly disease, and yet they made the muzzle-like animals, pushed an experimental, now proven lethal injection on them, and guilted parents into it with the don't kill grandma narrative. It's important to continue to reflect on all of the ways in which humanity was attacked by the propaganda machine known as Team Government, Team Health Expert, and Team Mainstream Media, so we can never let it happen again. Henry Kissinger once said, who controls the food supply can control the people. Today, the beef industry in America is under attack. Cows have been targeted by the purveyors of the climate change hoax in an effort to promote lab-grown meat, bugs, and other alternative proteins. It behooves Americans to start building up their own stockpiles of long-term storage beef. The problem there is that the vast majority of survival beef is horrible. They use low-quality cuts and beef crumbles that are barely edible. At VigilantBeef.com, Americans can get premium cuts like ribeye, New York strip, and tenderloin. It's freeze-dried, not dehydrated, which gives it a 25-year shelf life and retains the maximum nutrition and flavor. VigilantBeef.com is a veteran-owned, America-first company out of Texas. Our listeners can save 15% by using promo code BLACKOUT at VigilantBeef.com. That's promo code BLACKOUT at VigilantBeef.com. Well, Joe Rogan says that we are empowering evil with terms like minor attracted persons. Let's take a listen to this clip and then we'll talk about it.
It's so crazy that we've always protected children from influence. We've always protected children from bad decisions. That's why you can't get a tattoo
before you're 18 years old. They have to. Because they're soft targets. You're 100% right, but they're after childhood innocence. They say that too. There are papers against childhood innocence saying that it's a social construct meant to protect some kids and not others and meant to preserve normalcy and white heteronormativity and all of this other crap.
That's why the term minor attracted persons freaks me the fuck out.
Yeah.
When you're trying to normalize pedophilia, you're trying to normalize people who want to fuck kids. That's crazy.
And
by the way, it's almost always men. Like you are empowering the creepiest of creeps.
The creepy creeps.
The monsters of the male species. The ones, if you want to talk about men, like men being toxic, the most toxic.
Yeah.
You're empowering
like the 0.01%.
The evil ones. The ones infected by demons.
Yeah.
That want them to go fuck kids. You're empowering them by telling them that it's an identity.
Now, we've all seen clips of TED Talks advocating for the rights of minor attracted persons and trying to normalize this degeneracy and criminal behavior in society. The problem is it's being proliferated throughout the education system also, which we will talk about more later in the broadcast. Rogan's guest spoke of multiple papers that can be found online about childhood actually being just a social construct. Here's one example from Study Smarter, Childhood as a Social Construct. You can also find one on revisesociology.com, The Social Construct of Childhood. The ideas we have about childhood are created by society rather than determined by biological age. You can also find ResearchGate talking about this as well, childhood as a social construction. But as with all things that are perverted and wrong in society and destructive to humanity, it can generally be traced back to the United Nations. Now, we've spoken about this report on this broadcast in the past. It's from March 2023. It's commonly known as the 8 March Principles. And it was published by the International Commission of Jurists, who were founded in 1952. They're an international non-governmental organization with consultative status to the United Nations. And on page 22 of this report, under consensual sexual conduct, Principle 16, it talks about the enforcement of criminal law. And it says, with respect to the enforcement of criminal law, any prescribed minimum age of consent to sex must be applied in a non-discriminatory manner. Enforcement may not be linked to the sex or the gender of participants or age of consent to marriage. Moreover, sexual conduct involving persons below the domestically prescribed minimum age of consent to sex may be consensual, in fact, if not in law. But the problem is it's also spreading into law enforcement, the acceptance of pedophilia and changing it to a more palatable term like minor attracted persons. And of course it would, when the ICJ, that's backed by the UN, is calling for decriminalising sex with minors. Last year, anger as EU project sees Police Scotland rebrand pedophiles as minor attracted people. This was reported by the Scottish Daily Express. It says a controversial move to label pedophiles as minor attracted people in a top-level report has been defended by Police Scotland, with the force suggesting the EU was to blame. Chief Constable Livingston's annual year-end report refers to child abusers as minor attracted people, or MAPs. The move comes amid wider concerns by campaigners over what they see as attempts to rebrand pedophilia as a harmless sexual preference. And of course, the World Health Organization, who gives such great health advice and wants us to perpetually inject ourselves with mRNA forever, have offered their piece on comprehensive sexuality education. The World Health Organization is, of course, the medical arm of the United Nations. This is from the 18th of May, 2023. And according to them, sexuality education should begin at the age of 5. That's when they say that we should start talking to children about sex. So you can see the cancer that is behind the health advice of the pandemic is also the cancer behind the sexualization of children and advocacy for making sex with children legal. Every nation should be exiting and cutting all ties permanently with both the United Nations and the World Health Organization and any NGOs or parties that have worked alongside them to normalize pedophilia. Our next story, alarming news for those vaccinated after COVID infection. The story reads, people who recovered from COVID-19 and received a COVID shot were more likely to suffer adverse reactions. Researchers in Europe are reporting participants in the study were more likely to experience an adverse reaction after vaccination, regardless of the type of shot, with one exception, the researchers found. Across all vaccine brands, people with prior COVID-19 were 2.6 times as likely after dose one to suffer an adverse reaction, according to the new study. Such people are commonly known as having a type of protection known as natural immunity after recovery. People with previous COVID-19 were also 1.25 times as likely after dose two to experience an adverse reaction. The findings held true across all vaccine types following dose one. Of the female participants who received the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, for instance, 82% who had COVID-19 previously experienced an adverse reaction after their first dose, compared to 59% of females who did not have prior COVID-19. The only exception to the trend was among males who received a second AstraZeneca dose. The percentage of males who suffered an adverse reaction was higher, 33% to 24%, among those without a COVID-19 history. Participants who had a prior SARS-CoV-2 infection confirmed with a positive test experienced at least one adverse reaction more often after the first dose compared to participants who did not have prior COVID-19. This pattern was observed in both men and women across vaccine brands. Florence van Hunsel, an epidemiologist with the Netherlands Pharmacovigilance Centre Lareb, and her co-authors wrote, you can read the full story there at the Epoch Times linked on the Vigilant News Network article. And this is obviously a result of not listening to the real experts, the dissidents, the doctors who examined this with an actual scientific mind. Dr. Richard Urso tried to warn of this 2 years ago. Take a listen to this.
And I'll let you know that Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J all went out of their way to eliminate patients with natural immunity from their studies. Why did they do that? I wonder why. Because these patients retain an antigenic fragment of the virus in their system for a long time. We're finding even 15 months later. They're at serious risk for hyperimmune response. They didn't want their studies to be messed up. So they went out of their way to eliminate every single patient in every single study, J&J, Moderna, Pfizer, to make sure that none of these patients were enrolled in a study. I don't think any of you realize that. So we are taking, let's say, the children 5 to 11, about 80% have had the virus already. If we mandate the vaccine in this 5 to 11-year-old group, you have 28 million kids in the United States. That would be basically somewhere close to 20 million of these kids plus would actually have already had the virus. They're at high risk for a hyperimmune response. That means they're going to die. Some of them are going to die if you mandate a vaccine. That's what that means.
And if you watch the rest of that clip, he made the point that this was not a civil liberties thing. This was a medically poor decision. Take the freedom aspect out. It was simply deadly advice. And now we have the proof. Our next story, a friendly reminder. Judge Scott McAfee donated to Fannie Willis's campaign, and so did his wife. Let that sink in. Here's today's friendly reminder. Judge Scott McAfee, who refused to remove Fannie Willis from her junk RICO case against President Trump, despite perjuring herself under oath about the length of their relationship, donated to Fannie Willis's campaign. You can see the evidence here. Bing AI co-pilot had this to say about Judge McAfee's donation to Fannie Willis. Note, this biased report that labels Breitbart a far-right news network. Fulton County Superior Court judge, who is presiding over a case involving Donald Trump, previously donated to Fannie Willis's campaign. According to financial disclosures revealed by far-right news network Breitbart, McAfee made a small $150 donation to Willis in July 2020, the year that she was elected. However, legal experts quickly dismissed Breitbart's claim that this donation constitutes a conflict of interest. Really? Judges are expected to be impartial and avoid any appearance of a conflict of interest, but the donation was considered insignificant by experts. Oh, those experts again. In the case of former President Donald Trump, Willis has recently faced scrutiny due to her previously undisclosed romantic relationship with a special prosecutor in the case, Nathan Wade, whom she hired. Although they admitted to the relationship, both Willis and Wade denied any wrongdoing and asserted that Willis should not be disqualified from the case. Judge McAfee's wife also donated to Fannie Willis, again via biased co-pilot. Additionally, his wife also contributed to Willis's campaigns. Furthermore, before his appointment, Judge McAfee made donations to other political figures, including Governor Brian Kemp and Republican State Representative candidate Lindsey Rutter. The central issue now lies in whether the relationship between District Attorney Fannie Willis and Special Prosecutor creates a conflict of interest or merely the appearance of one. Judge McAfee's decision will play a crucial role in the ongoing legal proceedings. Something is up. Something big. Something suspicious. You can't quite pinpoint it, but you can't deny it either. All you have to do is trust your gut. Listen to it and prepare with My Patriot Supply. Since 2008, My Patriot Supply has helped millions of American families prepare for the uncertain future. Many of them choose three-month emergency food kits. With 22 food and drink varieties, there'll be no food boredom. With over 2,000 calories per day, there'll be no starvation. And sealed inside ultra-durable four-layer packaging, these ready-hour meals last up to 25 years in storage. Stock up on all the food kits your family needs at our website, preparewithvnn.com. You'll get each kit for $200 off. Protect yourself, protect your people. Get your kits at preparewithvnn.com. They'll ship fast and free. Preparewithvnn.com. Our next story is yet another we shouldn't have to bring you, much like the information about people advocating for minor attracted persons, drag queen story time, changing your gender after you're dead, and so on. That's because men do not belong in women's sports. The now famous term, what is a woman, and the sheer lunacy of people not being able to define a woman has overtaken the left and the left's narrative in media, in politics, in every facet of society, and in this case, women's sports. This lunacy of not being able to define this age-old term or reference, woman, which has been with us since the dawn of man, has brought us to this point in civilization where the fear of societal and political cancellation spawns situations that really, ultimately, put women at extreme risk. This seems to be a one-way phenomenon and is obviously clearly very advantageous because we just don't really see it going the other way. Women aren't screaming to participate in men's sports because they'll lose. It's quite simple, really. You can't argue with muscle mass, bone density, lung capacity, and in many cases, just sheer overall size and strength. But this story is about more than that. It's about the sheer fact that women are not safe or comfortable in this environment because it's about more than just the unfair competition aspect to all of this. 16 female athletes sue NCAA for allowing men to compete in women's sports. In the latest attack on transgender madness in women's sports, former University of Kentucky Wildcats swimmer Riley Gaines and 15 other female athletes have filed suit against the NCAA, alleging violations of federal Title IX law arising from its insertion of man-to-woman transgender athletes into women's competition. The NCAA's most basic job is to protect the fairness and safety of competition, but instead, the NCAA continues to openly discriminate against women, Gaines told the Free Press. Much of the complaint centres on what women experienced at the 2022 National Swimming Championships. Infamously, man-to-woman transgender Penn Quaker Leah Thomas was not only allowed to compete against women, but was also given the use of the women's locker room. As described in this excerpt from the 156-page complaint, it says, "The first time most of the plaintiffs became aware of Thomas's access to the women's locker rooms and restrooms was, one, when Thomas walked in on them while they were fully naked or in a state of substantial undress. Two, when they unwittingly walked in on Thomas and observed Thomas undressed with male genitalia exposed. Or three, when Thomas undressed in front of them." NC State Wolfpack swimmer Kylie Allens chose to change in a dimly lit storage and utility closet behind a set of bleachers rather than risk being caught naked by Thomas or having to see him stand around naked displaying his manhood. "I was literally racing US and Olympic gold medalists and I was changing in a storage closet at this elite level meet. I just felt that my privacy and safety were being violated in the locker room," Allens told the Free Press. "Women's racing suits are so tight that they require 15 to 20 minutes to put on," notes the complaint. "And while you're doing this, you're exposed. You can't just stand there and hold a towel around you while you're putting the suit on at the same time." Now, Thomas, who was not a noteworthy athlete when competing against fellow men, won the women's national championship in the 500-meter freestyle by a huge margin, beating three female Olympic medalists in the spectacle. Among the plaintiffs is Tyler Matthew of the University of Florida Gators, who didn't make it to the final of the 500 free because Thomas took the slot. The inclusion of Thomas also cost Matthew first-team All-American honors. Gaines noted that the NCAA swimming championship environment was even more Orwellian due to Title IX fanfare that accompanied it. The NCAA was passing around T-shirts that said 50 years of Title IX and 50 years of creating opportunities for women. But these were the same people who were actively taking our opportunities away and telling us we weren't worthy to be called champions, and instead this man, who merely says he's a woman, is. Hammering home the irrationality of the NCAA's approach, the plaintiffs say the NCAA allows men to compete on women's teams with a testosterone level that is 5 times higher than the highest recorded testosterone level for elite female athletes. It asserts that regardless of having taken hormone-suppressing drugs, post-pubescent men have a biological edge which no woman can achieve without doping. The lawsuit was organized by the Independent Council on Women's Sports, and the plaintiffs, which also include track, tennis, and volleyball athletes, are demanding that the NCAA make rule changes to bar biological males from women's competition, revoke awards previously given to men who beat women, and also pay damages for pain and suffering, mental and emotional distress, suffering anxiety, expense costs, and other damages due to defendants' wrongful conduct, as they should. Well, the ability to speak freely faces yet another horrifying attack. A new bill out of Canada is threatening sentences up to life in prison, something traditionally preserved for manslaughter or murder, for those found guilty of hate crimes. This is not satire. This is real life 1984. Trudeau's Canada threatening life sentences for hate, whatever that is. Proposed Bill C-63 says, everyone who commits an offence under this Act or any other Act of Parliament, if the commission of the offence is motivated by hatred based on race, national or ethnic origin, language, colour, religion, sex, age, mental or physical disability, sexual orientation or gender identity or expression, is guilty of an indictable offence and liable to imprisonment for life. But it gets worse. The new bill bribes citizens to snitch on their fellow Canadians. That's right, it says, or according to the High Wire, C-63 bill allows someone to make a complaint of a discrimination anonymously. If that hateful complaint is found legitimate, a maximum of $20,000 goes to that person. It's not hard to imagine the level of abuse that could come from such incentives, of course. Prominent legal scholar Jonathan Turley wrote, the Online Harms Act, or Bill C-63, increases the potential penalties from 5 years to life imprisonment. It also increases the penalty for the willful promotion of hatred, a dangerously ill-defined crime, from 2 years to 5 years. The proposed changes constitute a doubling down on Canada's commitment to reducing free speech for citizens, despite criticism from many in the civil liberties community. There is also a chilling option for house arrest if a judge believes a defendant will commit an offence. We're literally talking about thought crimes here, everyone. Once the new penalties are in place, a host of other groups will demand similar treatment for those with opposing views on their own causes. This law has already increased the penalties for anything deemed hateful speech. Similar legislation to define and crack down on in-person and online hate is being pushed across Europe. Just recently in Belgium, former Flemish parliamentarian Dries van Langhove was sentenced to 1 year in prison. The reason for this sentence was for sharing supposedly racist memes in a private group chat. For more details on this disturbing trend, you can watch the full segment of The High Wire below. The most disturbing part, as highlighted by Jonathan Turley, is that the term hate is so ill-defined. In fact, it largely simply enables people who have hurt feelings to see those with ideas that may challenge their official narrative, for example, that men don't belong in women's sports, as hateful. And it further incentivizes these lunatics who believe in the nonsense that men can be women to see those who are advocating for stopping life-damaging puberty blockers in children, for example, imprisoned. This bill literally gives the mentally deranged snowflake society people who scream transgenocide every time we pose that maybe we shouldn't be mutilating a child's genitals the keys to the freedom of common sense people. But that's just one example. The powers it gives the government are so far-reaching that it could be considered hate speech to say that the COVID injections, or any of the future mandated injections they're no doubt planning, are dangerous because that endangers public health, and that's hateful. This is a terrifying bill, and no doubt an introduction ahead of the World Health Organization's desired amendments to the international health regulations, which actually do call on countries to change their local laws accordingly to ensure there is no pushback allowed on the WHO's future mandates. But they keep telling us we'll retain our country's sovereignty, of course. Bottom line, every country is operating in lockstep with Agenda 2030, which is ultimately about imprisoning you in pods in smart cities, enslaving you to a social credit system through a digital ID, which will be linked to your digital currency, and ensuring you can't ever say a bad word about it, or else. In this case, the or else is life in prison. Now, if you think this is unique to Canada, I'd encourage you to look at all of the laws across every single Western nation and EU nations being implemented to this effect. Yes, it's coming in increments, but it's full steam ahead. And it must be stopped. Now, resolving to eat healthier this year was easy. Actually doing it? Not so easy. Better nutrition is a key to health and longevity. And a healthy diet could even help you avoid health risks that run in your family. Field of Greens is our healthy superfruit and vegetable habit. It's the only fruit and vegetable product that literally promises better health. At your next checkup, your doctor will notice your improved health or your money back. Do your vitamins or green drinks promise better health? Nope. Each superfruit and vegetable in Field of Greens was doctor selected for a specific health benefit. Some support your heart, lungs, and kidneys. Others support metabolism for healthy energy and weight loss. If you resolve to get healthier in 24, it starts with Field of Greens. We got you 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use promo code blackout. That's promo code blackout at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Our next story, Dr. Pierre Corey reveals why Big Pharma is terrified of vitamin D. Why is the pharmaceutical industry averse to vitamin D? Well, the answer? Because it threatens the disease model. Now, Dr. Pierre Corey told Tucker Carlson, we should have had a vitamin D supplementation campaign nationwide to fortify immune systems and help protect against severe disease. Now, he's not wrong. Government health agencies around the world failed the people they are supposed to serve. We did not need lockdowns. We did not need ventilators. We did not need remdesivir. It turns out that we could have kept COVID in check by increasing the population's vitamin D levels either through sunshine exposure or supplementation. The problem? Well, there was no money to be made from it. A new meta-analysis out of Italy published in the journal Nutrients has unearthed some shocking data about vitamin D. Looking at data from 16 different studies and 1.2 million individuals, the meta-analysis revealed vitamin D showed about a 60% effectiveness against the incidence of COVID-19 in randomized controlled trials. Vitamin D showed about 40 to 50% effectiveness in reducing the incidence of COVID-19 in observational studies. For preventing severe COVID-19 cases requiring ICU care, vitamin D supplementation was about 70% effective. So we didn't need to lock ourselves inside for years, be afraid, and vilify our neighbours for not wearing a mask. All we needed to do was go outside, get sunshine, and increase our vitamin D levels, and everything would have been fine. You can watch that full interview linked in the article below, but I want to play a quick excerpt here.
And there was really simple stuff that we knew that would help fortify immune systems and help protect against severe disease that we thought that are super safe, that on a risk-benefit precautionary principle, we should have, as a rule, just recommended. Vitamin D for one, we should add a vitamin D, supplementation campaign nationwide. Would have been very easy to do. Now, as an aside, vitamin D has been one of the most attacked substances over the last 3 or 4 decades by the pharmaceutical industry.
Why?
It threatens the disease model. I mean, we can do an hour on vitamin D, Tucker, but
vitamin D like in milk?
Yes, like vitamin D, like. It's vitamin D is a whole other discussion, but they're terrified of vitamin D. Our normal reference.
Can I say, if you find yourself terrified of vitamins, you're probably on the wrong side.
Exactly. You're probably on the wrong side.
Our top story tonight is one that should terrify every person who thinks the government is not the one who should be raising your children, but in fact that responsibility belongs to the parents. This is especially crucial in a day and age where educational institutions are becoming more woke and, as we mentioned earlier, depend on institutions like the UN, WHO, and all of their NGOs for advice on how to educate children, including sexualizing them as early as 5 years old. Where sexual education was once reserved for giving young people knowledge about consensual sex for the purpose and understanding of procreation in the natural form, this is not standard sexual education anymore. This is almost solely a complete push for degeneracy in children. Classes involving extremely graphic imagery and discussion on sex, masturbation, all sorts of depraved and degenerate practices that would seem is anything but the essential and core purpose of sex and sexual education. Sexual discussions and behaviour has also become more prevalent in educational institutions of late, as has sexual behaviour amongst teachers in school. In this shocking story out of Australia, teachers at Balmoral State High School in Brisbane are under investigation for stripping and dressing as a nun with her legs open in a sexually provocative photo shoot on school grounds for the 2023 staff calendar, which was then displayed in the staff room where, of course, children may see it. Even if children aren't normally allowed in the staff room, this material does not belong on school grounds. One of the mainstream media outlets in Australia, Channel 9, seem to think it's funny that teachers are behaving this way in school. Take a look at this.
One of them was a gold mankini, the other was a nun. You can see in these pictures that were also, is important to note, taken on school grounds in the toilet block and also in the staff room kitchen. And it was all for a staff room calendar. One of those photos, like I say, a gold mankini, yes, that was put on by a male teacher. He's sitting in a chair with his legs wide open for everyone to see. And then there's also him on his all fours in another photo with another teacher dressed as a nurse, and her foot is on his back or on his bottom, however you want to look at it.
So this is the caliber of some of the teachers being produced by the education system in the state of Queensland, the same state that is currently pushing to mandate a curriculum on parents that choose to keep their children outside of this environment and instead give them quality education through homeschooling. But it's not just this reason that parents feel homeschooling is better suited to their children. They don't feel the children are getting the proper lessons in history, for example. They feel the curriculum is too woke with lack of focus on the basics, reading, writing, math. But after a 195% surge in homeschooling, the Queensland government has introduced legislation in Parliament mandating that home education is consistent with the Australian government's curriculum. The same government that is producing teachers who do kinky photo shoots at school. George Christensen is a former Member of Parliament who's been advocating for the freedoms of Australians for years. He joins us to discuss now. George Christensen, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Maria. It's great to be on.
It's great to have you. Well, a huge surge in homeschooling since the COVID era, and I would say that that's pretty widespread across most places for obvious reasons. But now the Queensland government is yet again overreaching, trying to get involved in parents' lives and the ways in which they educate their children. Can you describe what exactly is happening here?
Yeah, look, what's happening is that the organisation I work for, Citizen Go, had done a bit of research and found that the Queensland government was in the throes of changing the Education Act, doing a review of that act. And there were murmurings about there being changes for homeschooling. So we immediately kicked into gear with a petition without actually knowing particularly what those changes were. It was like a preemptive strike to not put any changes out there that would harm homeschooling families. Well, actually, only last week did the changes to this Education Act actually come out. And yes, they are going on a full-blown, full-scale attack on homeschooling families. Most of these homeschooling families have decided to get out of the state education system because they disagree with the syllabus, because they disagree with what's being taught as part of the curriculum. The idea now is that everything is going to have to come under the national curriculum. And the national curriculum is rife with a whole heap of wokery. I mean, this is where the rot begins. And in fact, even speaking to some Christian schools that currently they currently work within the national curriculum, but loosely. And they tell me that it's incredibly difficult to work within it and teach kids anything meaningful, particularly about history. History is very important. If you don't know where you come from, how do you know where you're going? The problem is they load it up with a whole heap of black armband history, Indigenous history, which is fine, but we shouldn't be neglecting, you know, the ancient history and modern history of Western civilization. That's being abandoned largely. So there are problems galore with this, and it's only going to get worse, Maria. The government is now saying basically to homeschooling families, you can only teach what we tell you to teach.
This is just unbelievable. I heard a story recently from a Christian school in New South Wales. I won't name the school as it's not public at this stage, but they had an issue where a young student came to school in a dress. This was a boy that came to school in a dress. This Christian school, obviously, this is something that violates their religious values, and they were threatened that if they did not accept this, they would be shut down. So more and more we see government creeping into schools. Meanwhile, yep, we have this school in Brisbane where the teachers have just done a kink photo shoot on school grounds and displayed it in the teachers' room. So what can we really expect to be mandated in this curriculum, George?
Well, I mean, the whole of the state education system is going to hell in a handbasket when you see things like that going on, and you just got to wonder about the attitude, the mindset of people that we're leaving in charge of our kids for a very large number of hours every week. So that's why parents have opted out. I mean, since COVID, right, I think that the penny started to drop for quite a few people, and they took their kids out of the schooling system, out of the mainstream schooling system, out of both public and private, even Christian education, knowing that there are values that they want to instill in their children that government is just not going to teach, that the national curriculum is just not going to allow for. And, those values, it could be Christian values, there could be values of liberty, but largely they're values that are being sidelined by government. And that's why we've seen a 100% surge in homeschooling across Australia since the pandemic, a 200% surge in Queensland since the pandemic. And the government is terrified about this because it means tens of thousands of families around the nation are now not part of the government mandated education system, which we could also call indoctrination these days. We really could. And so this is why this is the first strike in the country against homeschooling. It's coming out of Queensland because we've had that 200% surge, the largest of any state. If they get their way here, I guarantee you the same will happen in New South Wales, the same will happen in Victoria, in Tasmania, in South Australia, in WA. It'll happen all around the nation. So we've got to stop this in Queensland or else basically that's it. I mean, if instilling values in your children that you wish to see becomes something you can't do because, you know, you can only teach what's in the national curriculum, then heaven help us, we've lost the next generation. This is very, very important.
George, some time ago, I did a report on all of the drag queen story time that was happening in the United States, and I warned very soon we'll start to see this here in Australia. And people at the time accused me of importing a culture war because I dare say they don't really understand the agenda, or maybe didn't at the time. And so the reason why this story out of Australia is so important to the United States and every other country is because the agenda is the same everywhere. It just rolls out at different times in different countries. countries based on where they think they can get away with it most. And so that is really, this is relevant to every country. I guarantee they will start to see similar attacks on homeschooling, just like we see attacks on farming, just like we see attacks on medical choices. It's the same everywhere, lockstep, every step of the way. But back to this story of what's happening with the teachers in Queensland, I mean, in this school in Brisbane, if this is the behavior that we are seeing teachers display, obviously this is something that's bred within these educational institutions that makes them think that it's okay to behave this way. We know that teachers in the United States are openly talking about how they are, secretly inviting children to LGBT lunches and things of this nature. I mean, it's insane. So what can we really expect will happen to a parent, for example, if they choose to vary from the school syllabus? The same sort of thing, I guess, that we can see in the state of Victoria, where if a parent objects to their child mutilating themselves, they face prison.
Yeah, well, I mean, heaven help us where this leads. I mean, you're right. I wouldn't like to cast a wide net and say all teachers, or even a majority of teachers. I think that particularly in Queensland, some sanity still prevails. Things are right. But there is a hardcore minority of activists within the education system who are using the education system for the purposes of indoctrination. And a lot of those activists actually have captured the key institutions that run education. They've captured the institutions that craft the national curriculum. So it's in there. We see it in outfits like that Safe Schools outfit, which embeds itself into the curriculum as well. But you're right, where is it going to lead to once parents are unable to homeschool as they choose? I mean, you could have dissenters that decide that they're going to just give the finger to the government and say we're going to carry on the way we want to teach as we always have been, which is much better than your educational system. My fear is that will that lead to knocks on the door by child protection services that will result in children being taken away from those families? I mean, I wouldn't put anything past the government in this regard. They don't want children to be instilled with values that the government doesn't deem suitable that or acceptable.
But Marxist. That's a Marxist approach to raising the future generation, George.
It is. It is. That's the whole thing. I mean, and it's not conspiratorial or anything like that, or crazy to say that public education was a very big push by Karl Marx for a clear reason. He wanted to see a decoupling of the link between children and the family unit, and ensure that the people who were teaching the next generation were teaching them values that were opposed to the family, that were opposed to capital, that were opposed to freedom, basically, that were all about promoting communism. So, I think that there's a hardcore minority of people in the education system that probably still hold to those views.
Home Education Australia spokesperson Samantha Bryan raised concerns with the AAP that the mandate may lead to more parents taking home education underground. This is something that that you've spoken about just before. And Ms. Bryan also told the publication most families registered with the Home Education Unit are succeeding with homeschooling, even if they are not following the national curriculum, and essentially said if it's not broken, no need to fix it. This sort of adds on to what you were saying, where they'll just maybe take it underground and continue doing what they're doing, and this may lead to children being taken from the parents' care. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, it's good to have these statements that if it's not broken, why fix it? Children are succeeding with homeschooling. Can you comment on that?
Well, look, there's no breakage in the system. There's absolutely none. I can tell you that I know of families that do homeschooling, and they tell me that, for instance, girls that were pulled out of a private school, who were basically C-level students, they were homeschooled then for a number of years. And then the final year of secondary education, put back into the private school, and they went from getting C's and C minuses to straight A's to actually being the ducks of the school. So academically, there is, you know, it works. It 100% works. And it's a nonsense to say, oh, yes, but what about socially? Because most of these homeschooling parents actually are in contact with each other and bringing the homeschooling kids all together on regular sort of weekly or even several times a week basis. There are other outlets for kids to socialize rather than just being put in the schoolyard and, quite frankly, subjected to bullying, which does go on far too far in the state school system. So, you know, it is working. The government just doesn't like the fact that it's working because it doesn't like the fact that the value system that is behind homeschooling is something that's completely antithetical to their system.
Oh, God forbid we had independent thought, George. That's just not allowed in today's society. Well, we thank you so much for advocating for the homeschooling parents and the children that are benefiting from homeschooling, George. You've been advocating for freedoms, you know, for Australians, even as an MP during the COVID era, against all odds. So we really, really are appreciative of you. Let people know where they can find you and follow your work.
Yeah. If you go to citizengo.org, you will find the petition up there, Hands Off Homeschooling. I just ask all homeschoolers and others that are concerned about the removal of you know, independence in homeschooling to share that petition far and wide.
Thank you so much, George. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Maria.
It is absolutely a Marxist tactic. It is beyond just sexualizing the children. It's about indoctrinating them from a young age to think just like the state wants them to think. It's raising an army of social justice warriors who will fight for the cause of the one world government. Climate change, transgender madness, perpetual mRNA, crickets and pods for living. That is what they want. They've worked the long game to get exactly that because they know that if you can capture the children, you will have captured the future generation. And we have to fight to protect our children from their clutches. That brings us to the end of this broadcast. We thank you all for joining us this week and your continued support of this show. It is so appreciated. Please make sure to like, give us your thoughts in the comments, and share this broadcast widely. Follow Vigilant News and Vigilant Fox on X. Visit the Vigilant News Network website for regular updates and find me on X also at Z_media. That's Z EEE_media, and find all of my work on zmedia.com. We'll be back next Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern with the truth the mainstream media desperately does not want you to know. Until then, stay informed, stay vigilant. Good night.